hour number three of the show here on this Black Friday morning. Hopefully everybody had a good Thanksgiving. This is a Thanksgiving song, isn't it? Yeah. You have to turn your mic on for people to be able to hear you.
Okay. I was doing my impression of Silent Bob.
Oh, well, nice work. So wait, do you think Silent Bob yells and just nobody can hear him?
He doesn't have his mic on.
Oh.
It turned out, actually, if you read the... if you watch the director's commentary of first Clerks movie...
Which I definitely didn't.
Because it's played by the director. He says, a technical issue. He actually had dozens of lines in the movie. Mm. The microphone wasn't on.
That's not good. You ever seen the Clerks cartoon?
They said, way to be silent, Bob. My name is Kevin.
Have you ever seen the cartoons?
I have not.
Oh, those are funny. Those are better than the movie. Okay, so the Cardinals this weekend, Kyler Murray's been limited in practice, and we saw against Seattle what this offense looks like when Kyler Murray's limited on the field. So just because he's been limited in practice this week does not mean that he's going to have any issues on Sunday against the Patriots. But if you're looking at this game and saying, well, the Cardinals are clearly just a better team than New England, it's going to come down to how the game actually plays out. Are they a better team if Kyler Murray can't run?
It's such a disappointing thing to see this deep into the Cliff Kingsbury offense that if you take away Kyler's magical ability, if you take away his ability to make something out of nothing or to take something and make, you know, it fantastic,
yeah,
how normal looking the offense looks. I always say, like, can you imagine what this team would look like with Josh Rosen at quarterback, you know, for the offensive guru?
Yes, I can. I watched it.
Well, I was saying, for what the offensive guru that Cliff Kingsbury is supposed to be and for the weapons they have on offense, if you take away Kyler Murray's, even if it's a called run, even on the called runs work great because he's able to juke three guys and he's the fastest guy in the NFL. If you take away his ability to make these plays, Kyler Murray is a good pocket passer, but he's nothing special. What makes him special is the running. What makes the offense special is the rushing ability.
If
you take that away, you're right. They're probably just about the same as New England.
Yeah, because, you know, as far as Kyler, the pocket passer, I mean, there's a lot to be said for his ability to move around in the pocket and his ability to throw at any angle. I know that was brought up a million times when he was drafted, but you see it come into play now through his first year and a half in the NFL. He's still a good quarterback that way, but you said it right there. What sets him apart is his ability to throw like that, which I'm not really sure a guy like Lamar Jackson can do. If he can, we haven't seen it. But then also his ability to run like Lamar Jackson, where most quarterbacks can't do that. So he has, I mean, even a guy like Mahomes. Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. I don't think anybody argues that. But he can't run like Kyler Murray. He's much better at the other stuff. He's better than everybody at the other stuff. But Kyler is not that far behind in a lot of ways, and he can run. That's what makes him so dangerous. So if he can't do that...
It's just funny that his throwing shoulder, his throwing arm was what got hurt.
Yeah.
So to compensate, they called less runs and more throws.
It's when Kyler Murray gets hit, I feel like that is the one time you see Cliff Kings... That, I guess, in the end of games, is when you see Cliff panic. Because the game where they kicked on second down, remember he got drilled coming around the edge, and they were like, we're kicking on second down.
Right.
and I've seen enough.
It is funny because he's gotten hardly hit.
He's hardly hit. Oh. Yeah, I don't know what that means.
he's barely been hit hard in his career.
Yeah, it really...
For something that people were most worried about when he was drafted, oh, the first time he takes a hard hit, that's the end of him, he's too small. There hasn't been that many instances where you've really been scared after he took a hit.
I feel like they've all come in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, and I mean, the offensive line has played well, but his escapability is just so good. The last game was really one of the first games ever where he just couldn't escape. Where it felt like on those, you know, whether it was the run options or whether it was a called run or whether it was just, you know, getting pressure, he wasn't able to make a move and get free. And the play he got hurt was just sort of like a typical kind of tackle. It wasn't like when he got hurt, you went, oh my God. But
yeah.
It was the way he landed. And
they definitely drove his shoulder into the ground.
And when you're much smaller. And that's the other thing. If you think Bill Belichick isn't ruthless enough to be telling his defense to make sure you hit Kyler Murray, make sure you follow through on these tackles, you know, when you have him in your grasp, drive him to the ground.
Yeah.
Because they know he's playing hurt. Even if he plays, and I think we think he's going to play. Right? I mean,
I think he's going to play.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Kime didn't sound worried. He practiced all week, even though he was limited.
I mean, he got hurt on the first drive of that Seahawks game, was able to play the whole game.
Right.
So, yeah, I would assume he's going to play. The question is he going to look like Kyler Murray, or is he just going to be a quarterback?
And the other thing is that how much is it is in Kyler's head? Like, is the offense going to be limited because of Cliff's play calls, or is it going to be limited because Kyler won't feel comfortable scrambling and potentially getting hit if he's not 100%?
I think that's a very fair question. I think what has made him so effective through the first, whatever it is now, 26 games is he never, especially after like the first two or three, he seems to do a lot of stuff on instinct. To me, that's been, in fact, maybe the biggest step forward this year, and it started in that San Francisco game. It's almost like he drops back to pass. If nothing's there, his instinct is, okay, I'm going to get 15 yards by running. He doesn't sit there and think about it. He just does it. So if he's thinking about it this week, or if it looked like he was thinking about it at times against Seattle last week after he got hurt, again, that's any little edge that you take away from Kyler Murray. Everything the Cardinals do runs through him. And I hear what you're saying, that it's depressing, that it's like if he struggles, they don't look good. But that's kind of just the reality of the NFL.
And the other problem is that if his instincts aren't to try to run and make people miss and make something exciting and magical happen, a lot of times his instincts when he's in trouble are to throw an intentional grounding.
Yeah. Yeah. that is the other instinct.
Or to heave the ball up, which you think is out of bounds, but it's enough inbounds that someone can make an interception on it. It's like his other, you know, in the, like, look, we're watching highlights of him. Boom, 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 boom. He's so quick and he's so great. And his instincts when he runs are a step ahead of any what defensive player can react to.
Yeah, a lot of these plays, he's not even getting touched. I mean, they are showing a ton of his runs on ESPN right now.
On Good Morning Football on the NFL Network.
That's not ESPN. Whatever. No. Nobody would have known if he didn't say
well,
that.
Well, do you see Stephen A. Smith wearing a gigantic, oversized cowboy hat?
I have already once today,
well,
but not
on that channel,
TV.
So it can't be ESPN.
Okay, I guess that's fair. Here, I haven't heard this yet, but this is Bill Belichick. And this is Bill Belichick on with Doug and Wolf on Wednesday. So when Wolf is around, Belichick tends to give actual answers. They asked him about Kyler Murray.
Well, he's a dynamic player, as you guys know. We've seen a lot of him. He's very fast and has a live arm. Can rip the ball. He's been productive, and you know they're one of the most explosive offenses in the league in terms of yards, first downs, points, big plays. So he has a lot to do with it. He's got a lot of other good players around him, and he's got a good coach with a good design. So it's a total team thing. But he's a key player in the. And the whole operation.
It's the most I've ever heard Bill Belichick talk since the last time he was on with Doug and Wolf like 5 years ago.
Yes, and it did take him only 6 minutes to say Kyler Murray is good. But here's the other thing.
I'm sorry. Are you complaining that Belichick is talking too much now?
No, it's true. Did you hear that interview with him where they asked him about why he doesn't like coffee?
No.
Or he doesn't drink coffee, I'm saying?
Uh-uh.
I don't think this I played for you, but I don't think this works. He mentioned how the Cardinals are an explosive offense and they're near the top in all these categories. The Cardinals have the number one ranked offense in a lot of different categories, or they're near number one, which is so deceptive to me, because the eye test, you've watched every minute of every game this year.
Yes.
At any point did you say this is the best offense in the NFL?
No, the Chiefs are the best offense in the NFL.
Right. And yeah. and it doesn't even feel like they're second best or anything. Like, you leave every game saying that, like, it could be more. It should be better.
I agree with what you're saying the first 4 weeks of the season. And then it was 30 against the Jets, 38 against Dallas, 37 against Seattle, 31 against Miami, 32 against Buffalo. Like, that's 21 last week. That was their most, I thought, just kind of bland effort, other than the Carolina game was the one against Seattle the second time around. But when the offense is putting up 30 points a week, and they always seem like they're like two or three big plays away from putting up like 45 points in a game, I could see it being one of the, I don't know, three or four best offenses in the NFL. I mean, to me, there's always the Chiefs are their own tier in almost every category when it comes to overall team or offense. But I don't know, who else do you look around the NFL and you say, okay, well, no, that team's offense is definitely more explosive than the Cardinals. Like, maybe New Orleans?
Yeah, New Orleans, maybe Green Bay when they're humming.
Yeah. I mean, when the Cardinals are humming, whatever, if that's the technical term, they seem to be fine, too.
First, why don't you drink coffee?
Because I don't like coffee.
Isn't that terrific?
That's fantastic. It is remarkable, though, how much more animated and willing to talk he is.
Yeah, but that's, when Wolf's his old player and has a personal relationship and knows him.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying every press conference he's like...
But I have to believe that Bill Belichick is not like that 24 hours a day, or else he would just be a miserable person to be around. The guy, you know... Doesn't live a hermetic? Is that even a word?
I don't think that's right.
He doesn't live in a cave by himself. He has friends. He has romantic relationships. So there must be something about him that is appealing to people. So I can't imagine he's just, you know, every day, every conversation.
First, why don't you drink coffee?
Because I don't like coffee.
We're going to break. When we come back, we'll look ahead to the NFL weekend, Week 12 coming up outside of the Cardinals game. That's next. It's the Doug and Wolf Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You ever play the drums loop?
Not professionally.
No? Never got paid for a gig?
Nope.
But just fooling around with, like, friends or something that were in a band?
I have a couple guitars. I think I'm more inclined to play the drums. I think I'm, like, built to play the drums instead.
Is it because you have the body of a drumstick?
Yes, I guess. That's how it works. Have you played the drums?
Yeah, I instantly knew I was not going to be good at it.
Okay.
I can't, like, keep the rhythm while people are doing other things.
That's the
things.
Thing. I can keep the rhythm very well, but I just can't learn guitar chords for some reason. Possibly because I've never been taught. That might be why.
So you just picked up the guitar and, like, boy, can't I learn this thing that I haven't been taught?
Yes, I wanted to be able to teach myself within, like, a day, and I couldn't, so I got frustrated.
You need to be bonked in the head with a coconut.
Does that make you a good guitar player?
Sometimes you wake up with abilities you didn't know you had.
But what if I wake up and I can, like, fly, but I can't play guitar?
That's still good. All I'm saying is stand underneath some palm trees.
What if I could fly and play guitar?
What if you just learn how to make delicious coconut recipes?
Yeah, none of the palm trees here have coconuts. You realize that, right?
Is that true?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if none of them.
What the hell have I been eating?
That's a good question. All right, the games this weekend that really impact the Cardinals. The biggest one, of course, is Rams 49ers. That's Sunday afternoon, but I would also say Chiefs Buccaneers on Sunday night and Bears Packers on Sunday night. Wait a minute. Chiefs Buccaneers Sunday afternoon, Bears Packers is Sunday night. And Seahawks Eagles on Monday night. So when you start to get to the primetime games this weekend, they all directly impact the Cardinals. And we are at that point where it's not just, hey, what are the Seahawks doing this weekend? The right. Rams, the Buccaneers, and I would still say the Bears matter because the Bears are only one game back.
Yeah, I mean, every team in that vicinity. I mean, you could say even the Saints, you could say the Vikings, like pretty much every team within striking distance or that the Cardinals are within striking distance of, you have to scoreboard watch now.
Yeah, but the main ones, don't you agree the main ones are the teams in the NFC West, the Buccaneers and the Bears.
Well, after that loss, do you still feel good about the Cardinals' chances in the NFC West?
Yeah.
They pretty much have to sweep the Rams to have any legitimate shot.
What are the Rams are only 1-1 in the division, right? And Arizona's 2-1. So you have to at least split with the Rams. I don't think, first of all, when the Rams win one more game, you owe me a sandwich from the last time we did a show together. So enjoy that.
Hey.
But I also don't think that they are, amazing by any means. They could go if the Cardinals split with them, they're probably going to lose another game or two somewhere.
I mean, I was completely wrong about the Rams, as you're just pointing out in our sandwich bet that we had.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I want a 12-foot sandwich. Like, I want a party sub.
A party sub?
Yeah.
With stuff in it?
Yeah. Yes.
Or just
sandwich stuff.
A giant bread.
No, I don't want giant bread.
Giant bread.
No, it sounds really appetizing.
Here's your loaf.
Here's your 12-foot piece of giant bread.
Loaf is an unappetitizing word, don't
it
you
is.
Think?
Get back Isn't to the Rams. You were so close.
just real quick on the loaf topic before we get in. Because a loaf of bread existed already.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had this meat concoction, which is very delicious. They could have named it anything.
Yeah.
For a meat loaf.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like they missed the chance there to something more delicious.
Yeah.
Now, what were we talking about?
The Rams.
Meat concoctions?
Yes, we were talking about meat concoctions, but before that, we were talking about the Rams.
And I don't think the Seahawks are that great either. I mean, it feels like the Cardinals are right on the same line as those teams, but they're now behind the eight ball. They're in third place, so you have to count on, and they have pretty easy schedules going forward, those other two teams. That's why, to me, you know, if the Cardinals take care and beat all their non-quote-unquote conference, non-division, whatever games, they'll make the playoffs, and they don't really need to beat the Rams. You could lose both games and still get in the playoffs. But then you also give yourself no chance to really mess up and lose one of these other games that you think on paper they should win. Like you said, the Giants are better, you know, or the new Patriots, you never know, with Bill Belichick. But so I think the head-to-heads versus the Rams are going to be very important. And then if you split one of those, you pretty much, in theory, looks like it's going to be really hard to win the division.
Yeah. That's fair. The problem is, like, if you get the 7th seed, you're probably playing Green Bay in the first round, which I don't think is a game the Cardinals can't win. But, I mean, the Eagles sitting right there, or the Washington football team, or whoever, that's, to me, is still the goal. I know that everybody else's goal is to win the division, and look, ultimately it is to win the division, but with the way the Saints are playing and the record, I mean, they're already two games ahead of the Cardinals. I don't think you're going to get the number one seed in the NFC. I just don't think there's a way the Cardinals can do that. They would basically have to win 12 games.
And you are in the same lines that, like, the home field advantage in the playoffs is not going to mean as much?
Not,
because there is something,
not if I get to play the Eagles.
Okay, but there is something to going to Philadelphia in late December on the road.
Yeah.
And we don't know if Philly's going to have fans or not at that point, but there's something to that.
Like, you mean their fans may have all given up on them because Carson Wentz can't throw a football?
They might not have any fans left in the city at that point.
I'm not going to sit here and say any game
is easy. It's going to be around Christmas time, where you're going to have to hear the stories about how they booed Santa Claus every 5 seconds.
Well, that's inevitable. That's happening either
way. They're going to do the intro shots where the guys are walking between the two Philly cheesesteak places. Do you really want to go through all that?
Yes, I would much rather play the Eagles in the playoffs than the Rams or the Packers or the Seahawks or the Buccaneers or the Saints. Yes, I would rather play the team that isn't good at football.
Well, listen, you and I are very different people.
Who do you want to play in the first round?
I've never been good at coaching or playing football, so my strategy of playing the better teams, I guess, is not.
This could have been your issue. Are you worried at all about the Bears?
No, not at all. Not at all worried about the Bears. I think that they're 5-5 right now.
Because you were so definitive about how the Rams weren't a good team, and now they look really good.
The Bears are going to lose this week by a lot to the Packers, and they're going to finish like 8-8 or 7-9. And you won't have to worry about that.
They've lost 4 in a row, the Bears have.
The Buccaneers one is very interesting because they play the Chiefs, and the Chiefs beat them. They're 7-5.
Yeah. That's huge.
That's
absolutely huge.
I mean, everyone's just assuming that one of these teams that we have not even penned in to the playoffs, they could go on a losing streak too. There's no great teams. I mean, maybe, like you said, New Orleans, but every other team in the NFC, I mean, even like you said, that they could beat the Packers.
If you go,
the Bucs are like a traveling circus right now with all the different players they have on their team, and who knows what Tom Brady is going to come each week.
The Eagles right now are leading that awful division. Or no, I guess technically Washington.
No, the Washington
is now.
Football team.
Yeah. And also, if the season ended today, Washington would have the 12th pick in the draft. And they're going to host a playoff game. And they're in a three-way tie, but they could easily have the 10th pick in the draft.
And those teams are now at the point where, at the best, like the winner is going to be 9-7. It's not even like, okay,
no
someone
way.
Can get hot. And
yeah. There's no way whoever wins the NFC East breaks 500. There's
7-9 probably.
6-10. Don't you think 6-10 could do it?
I think 7-9.
Okay. Well, yes, if 6-10 can do it, 7-9 definitely can do it.
You take a 6-10 team, and I'll take the 7-9 team, and we'll see who wins.
Okay.
With the 7-9 or 6.
All right. What's 2020? Anything goes. All right, we come back. Are we talking to Kellen after this?
Yeah.
Talking to Kellen Olsen to get his thoughts on the Phoenix Suns and the upcoming NBA season next. It's the Doug and Wolf Show. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin in for Doug and Wolf on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Welcome back to the show. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin in for Doug and Wolf on this Black Friday morning.
What is that you're doing over there?
Radio.
Are you strumming someone's pain on your fingers?
Oh, do you have...
Healing is it someone's life with their
Is this
words?
The only reason you asked Kellen to come on so you could do this?
No, because I'm not even allowed to... We've had him on a bunch of times leading up to the draft and free agency and all that stuff on Bickley and Murata.
Yes.
The first time I played his signature theme song that everybody loves, Killing Him Softly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Dan hated it and yelled at me.
Why?
So I'm not allowed to play it anymore.
Well, on his show, right?
Yeah.
Or you're not allowed to listen to that song anywhere ever, or Dan Bickley will pop
up. I tried to put it on my Discman, and he slapped it out of my hand.
He said, what is a Discman? Yeah. All right, joining us, I believe, is he here? He is. All right, on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, the one and only Kellen Olsen. Kellen, I hope you're having a good holiday.
Not after Jarrett brought that up. I think, like, when the song got played, I kind of, like, said, like, Jarrett's going to get to do what he wants. Everyone, like, you know, complains that Jarrett can do whatever he wants while he's running the board for Bickley and Murata. But then when he actually can't do what he wants and the song didn't play the next couple of times, you were kind of sad. You don't really need it. You want Jarrett to keep doing his Jarrett stuff. I was sad.
Yeah.
That's like when Luke complains about me taking the show off the rails.
Yeah, there's a difference between playing a song for 10 seconds and sitting next to Jarrett in a studio for 4 hours.
When Luke says, Jarrett, you're ruining the show, I know he's just joking around and he doesn't want me to actually stop.
It's just slang. Yeah. Ruining means you're making it better. All right, Kellen. Well, let's get into a little bit of basketball here. Now, we're less than a month away from the start of the season, and I guess
3 weeks away. Unbelievable.
It's almost here, finally. Where are you at with the Suns heading into this season, just in terms of the rest of the teams in the Western Conference? And I guess let's start with, what other teams in the West do you feel like got better?
It's not fair, but the Lakers, you look at who they lost. They lost Rondo, Bradley, Danny Green, Dwight Howard. They replaced them with a lot of better players. Dennis Schroeder just gives them a creation type of threat just in terms of initiating offense and creating something off the dribble that they just haven't had on those teams, really, around LeBron James. I think Marcus Gasol is just such a great fit to play alongside Anthony Davis on both sides of the floor. And they have Montrezl Harrell, who shows limitations in the bubble, but he's still a sixth man of the year and just a great offensive force. And then Wes Matthews was their other ad as well. I really like what the Lakers did. Portland really has needed a wing ever since Alfred Camino and Mo Harkless left about 3-4 years ago. And they finally got a really good one in Robert Covington. So I think they got better too. I think when you're comparing the Suns to the rest of the Western Conference, I think that the one thing that stands out the most is continuity. The Suns don't really have that because of the major pieces that they're bringing in, Jay Crowder and Chris Paul. You look at, like, the shifts that usually happen with all these huge deals, like we saw with the Clippers a year ago and the Lakers 2 years ago. We haven't really seen that in the West yet, and so the biggest battle for them is going to be these teams like Utah, Denver, Dallas, that are, like, in their range, specifically Portland's another one. But those teams have been together for quite a while now, and the Suns are just now adding Chris Paul to that. It's going to be that young group having to show that chemistry that they've built while Paul gets, like, assimilated. It shouldn't take him too long as well, but I think that it's, like, a dynamic to look at with the Suns specifically.
Let me follow that up then. Which teams in the West got worse? Because for the Suns to make the playoffs, you would think that would also have to factor in.
Yeah, unfortunately for the Warriors, it was due to injury with Klay Thompson. But obviously, they're a really fascinating team because
they got worse from what they were projected to be. But they're going to be better than they were last year.
Right. I think Denver got worse if you're looking for a team that undoubtedly did. Jeremy Grant was just a huge part of what they did, and they just got a really rough end of the deal where they offered him the same contract that the Pistons did, one that really overpays him, but he wanted to go play more of an offensive role there. So they're going to be looking at a roster for them without Grant and Plumlee. Plumlee wasn't really that great for them, but it still gave them a lot of depth. And you look at their team now, Michael Porter Jr. and Bol Bol going into their second seasons are just going to be more important for them. And two players who weren't that good for them last year were Will Barton and Gary Harris. With limited depth now, you can't afford those guys to have a down year like they did last year, and then you're relying on younger players as well. I think you look at Golden State, though, just beyond the fact that they lost Clay due to injury, you look at who they're really relying on around this group, because like a team built around Draymond Green and Steph Curry should be still be very good, but who knows which direction Oubre, Wiggins, and James Wiseman will swing. If two out of three of those guys or three out of three of those guys turn out to click and they really get going there, they're going to be a force again. But if those go south, no matter how well Steph is playing, and if Draymond really bounces back from his form in the past couple of years, they're still going to have to really battle for a playoff spot. I really didn't like what New Orleans did, too. I understand getting value for Drew Holiday and maximizing assets, but as Suns fans learned with Ryan McDonough in the past 5 to 6 years, like getting value on stuff only means so much, because James Jones took a hit on value in almost all of his moves last offseason, but almost all of them paid off. You look at getting rid of Drew Holiday and getting some picks and Eric Bledsoe and George Hill back, like that's a really great return, but you're shifting your team dynamic so much by getting rid of Holiday and bringing in Bledsoe, probably not in a good way, honestly, and I'm really intrigued to see how they go, but I think they're definitely worse off than they were a couple of weeks ago.
Talking to Kellen Olsen, Kellen, I guess for better or worse, the Suns are going to be linked to the Mavericks here for a little while. It doesn't seem like Dallas really did all that much this offseason. Is there more to what they've done than maybe appears on the surface, or do I need to be worried that they are gearing up to make a run at Giannis down the line at some point?
That's definitely what it is. They're gearing around 2021, but I think with time spent away, you kind of just forget how great Luka was, and he was first team All-NBA last year, so he was just flat-out one of the best players in the league last year, and the pieces that they put around him, when he's playing at that level and they've got enough of a supporting cast around him, even if Kristaps Porzingis isn't healthy or not, I think that they're still one of like the top 6, 7, 8 teams in the West, and they're going to be a playoff team, because I know some fans are kind of looking around at the West and looking at what teams could potentially fall off. I think Dallas is one that comes to mind. But if Luka stays healthy and plays anywhere close to the level that he was last year, he should. And contrary to belief, when he was coming out of the draft, he is going to keep getting better. And at his age, he is just going to, in his third, fourth, fifth years, those are the years when guys really improve the most. And it's really going to continue for him. They traded for Josh Richardson. They got rid of Seth Curry to free up some more money for 2021. But Josh Richardson is also a better fit. And if he gets back to the player he was in Miami 2 years ago as opposed to Philly last year, he's a big boost for them. But they're certainly looking at this and saying, like, yeah, we've got Luka, we've got enough pieces around him to be in the playoffs, but we're looking at 2021 as the year and the offseason where we can really add that dynamic second piece next to him, which they hope to be Giannis, and really start to make a power play in the West.
When you talk about Luka, you have to talk about DeAndre Ayton. And pardon the phrasing on this question, but if DeAndre Ayton is only as good as he's been the last 2 years, can the Suns still make the playoffs?
Can they still? Is that what you asked here?
Yeah. So, like, is this a legitimate playoff team if DeAndre Ayton is only as good as he's been the last 2 years, if he doesn't take that next step that everybody's hoping that Chris Paul makes him take?
Right. I think that they're more on the edge. I think they're in the play-in. I think that's what you're looking at. So for those who don't know, the 7th and 8th seeds now are going to be determined by a play-in tournament this season, with the 9th and the 10th seed being in there too to determine the last 2 playoff spots. And that's obviously a spot you want to avoid after working so hard in the regular season to potentially only come up short there and not make the playoffs. I think you're talking about being more in that territory if DeAndre doesn't improve, but even with the frustrations in his play, which you have expressed vehemently on Bickley and Murata, Jared, I think that you look at him and how much he's improved defensively from his U of A days in the past 2 years. He's improved year to year really well. I know that critics of his still aren't seeing what they want out of him, and like I'm one of those for sure, just with this, the consistency and just being a force around the rim every single game and just having that killer mindset. But with that being said, he has still improved year to year, and there is no reason for us to believe that he won't improve in year three. Now, is he going to make that huge jump that number one overall pick should in his third year and should under Chris Paul and Monty Williams? I can't say that for sure, but is he going to be better? I think he will. He's not the type of guy to just stagnate with how he's improved over two seasons so far.
Kellen, before we let you go, I do want to ask you about ASU because I'm pretty sure you watched at least one, if not both, of their games here over the last couple of days. Just your early impressions of Josh Christopher and the Sun Devils.
I'm really concerned about them. I really enjoyed Guard U 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when it was the Troy Holder, Cody Justice, Shane, and Evans trio, because it was just a really unlikely group that didn't really have a lead distributor or a guy who ran the offense. But they moved the ball so well, moved off the ball so well, that they were just this offensive powerhouse that seemed to thrive as a full-functioning offense without great ball movement. But you look at the game last night and the game 2 nights ago, they desperately need someone who is going to take on more of a facilitating role. And I just don't know if Remy Martin and Alonzo Verge or Holland Woods or any of those guys really have it in their playbook and just in their arsenal right now. When you look at the way Remy played last night, he just got really hesitant attacking the rim. I don't really know what it was. And the problem is guys like Remy, Verge, Christopher really got it going last night. He scored 28. But you look at when guys can fall out of rhythm in a game, Remy's not going to have like 4 or 5 minutes to kind of get himself back in the flow of things because this team has so much offense on it. And you look at some of their weaknesses, like last night, they just got killed on the offensive glass. Jalen Graham is really their only big, and he can't stay out of foul trouble 2 games in. But when you look for the help elsewhere on the interior and on the defensive end, you're looking at your forwards and your wings, but you got two freshmen there and Marcus Bagley and Christopher who need to help you there in those parts where guys that are more experienced 3 to 4 years in, juniors and seniors, help you. So I'm concerned about them just in terms of them being the type of high-end team that they should be with the talent they have, like a top 15, 20 team in the country. Can they still win the Pac-12? I think so. But Verge and Martin really figuring out how to balance the offense, get their own looks while getting other people involved is huge, because if they're putting up just 5 to 10 assists a game like they were a lot last year, they can only just be so good as an offense, and we know their defense is going to be in trouble already. I'm concerned, but I think Bobby Hurley has shown with those types of teams, like I said 3 years ago, that he can make it work. So we'll see. Villanova's a really good team.
Kellen Olson, great stuff as always. Thanks for the time. I know it's pretty early here. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, all right?
Thanks, Kellen.
Thanks, guys.
Is the U of A game on TV tonight?
Grambling? I'm not sure.
Today?
They're favored by 30, though, so I don't think we need to watch it, Joe.
I don't think they're filming that one. All right, thanks a lot, Kellen. Kellen Olson joining us on the Colter Automotive Group Sports Line. Colter Cadillac Tempe. Experience the difference. Visit ColterCadillacTempe.com. I like the idea of you bringing guests on just to ask them questions that you could easily look up on Google. Hey, what channel is this on? What time is this game?
I don't sound like that, do I?
You don't know.
Is that really
like
how I talk?
All right, we come back. What is next for college football? Like half the teams are having a season and the other half are in the Pac-12. That's next. It's the Doug and Wolf Show on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. This is supposed to be the day or at least weekend when ASU plays U of A in the Territorial Cup.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not going to happen.
You think the game in general will never happen this year or just...
No, I am starting to worry that's like the only game ASU is still going to get to play is the one against U of A in a couple weeks.
Isn't that something? 1-1. The win versus U of A and loss versus USC. How much have you been into college football in general this season?
I haven't.
Haven't really watched. It's really hard to get into it because you don't really know which games count, which games don't count. Like,
That is honestly what
games are happening and not happening.
Because in years past, I've always sort of contended, and I've made this contention with hockey too. Like, I feel like there'd be a lot more hockey fans if they knew the stories of players on the teams, and you need that to build year over year. It's one of the best parts of sports. Of like, okay, now I know so and so. I know James Harden coming into this year has had all these years with the Rockets, and we know his history, and he's frustrated and he wants out. Like, you need those storylines. In college football, you don't have time to learn all of the storylines across the whole country because these guys, the good ones, are switching to the NFL within a couple of years anyway. But what you are able to do in college is get behind certain teams, and this is a big game between Clemson and Notre Dame or whatever. Well, this year, Clemson, Notre Dame, Trevor Lawrence didn't play. And like you said, half these games, I don't even know if they're going to mean anything because, yeah, sure, Ohio State looks good, but what if they can't play any more games and they finish at 4-0? You know what I mean?
The same thing with, like, okay, how do we know which games matter? We're told that, like, okay, the Pac-12 season matters, but when Oregon starts off undefeated and they don't move at all in the rankings and they're, like, 18th or whatever,
yeah,
and then when Clemson does play and they lose and they don't move in the rankings because they're just Clemson, like, so, like, what are we supposed to... I mean, the regular season doesn't matter that much anyway because there's so much politics involved, but... It really seems like, and because it's not, it feels like the Pac-12 has been crushed the most, but every conference has been affected. And it's going to be, you're going to wind up having a season where some teams play 9 games, some teams play 8 games, 7, 6, 5. Like, you're going to have every combination of games played and opponents played.
Yeah.
Like, now that they've instituted this thing throughout all the conferences where when your game is canceled, you could just scramble and play anybody else.
Yeah.
Now it's going to really be, like, wild, and how do you judge things?
Yeah, I mean, I don't envy being on the selection committee other than they seem to have just decided it's going to be Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson,
Ohio State.
Yeah, and if one of those teams drops out, then, you know, whatever, they'll pull somebody else up. I'm enjoying that BYU is so far down the list because they were so open about how they would play anybody at any time, and then the Huskies were like, hey, can we play you? Because, you know, Washington State just dropped out, and they're like, ah! We're busy.
Well, the thing is, they wouldn't have been able to play them anyway because Washington wound up having to play Utah. That's
ultimately.
Their argument, was that we couldn't agree to it because there was always the caveat that if another Pac-12 games, that takes precedent.
But then there was another Pac-12 game. I mean, there was a couple.
That's what I'm saying. That's
but
why
was
Washington wound up playing
though,
Utah.
Too. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, if
instead of BYU.
If Washington had played BYU, then Utah could be playing Colorado.
You know, would
right
I say
now.
BYU?
Yeah, well. When you figure that out, if they were playing Washington. Side note, when you say something like that, are you expecting laughter?
You're laughing, aren't you?
It's more pity than anything else.
Oh, my goodness. If you've lived my life, you will take a pity laugh,
oh,
my
really?
Friend. That
okay.
is just as good.
Okay.
I can't believe you even thought that a pity laugh to me is not as acceptable.
But you can tell the difference between a pity laugh and a laugh laugh.
Not anymore.
See, now that's funny.
Thank you.
That's comedy. Are you in on football this year, college football? And
not,
do you think you'll be in on college basketball?
Well, I could tell you right now that there's nothing I love more in sports than U of A college basketball.
It doesn't seem like it when you're
it's
watching
it. It's because it drives me crazy. But that's why it drives me so crazy. And it's so hard to watch the games is because I love it so much.
Okay.
And I admit that Sean Miller has really grinded down my love over the last few years. Both with the, you know, discrepancies within the program, even though we've been vindicated time and time again.
Yes.
And then also just his lack of success in the tournament.
Yeah.
So I've never, ever gone into a season knowing less about the team than this year. I didn't even know what channel they're playing on until a minute ago.
Until I told you and you didn't believe me and somebody texted you and I was right.
I didn't even realize they were starting the season on Wednesday until the game was canceled.
Let me ask you this. The Sean Miller stuff, and I know he vindicated himself and somehow that worked.
Isn't that great, by the way?
No.
They just said that. They just said no.
Yeah. And
they
like,
got
oh,
all
well,
these sanctions and they just said no. And now they're just playing the season and he's coaching and that's that.
Why? Because you just said he has grinded you down over the last few years. And not all of that was based on the legal stuff. Like, why did they stick by him through all this? He's not
that great.
Yeah.
He's still, I mean, he wins a lot. He wins still, like, between 20 and 30 games
it
every year.
It pains me to say this because I don't like
top.
U of A. You could get another coach to win 20 plus games at U of A every year.
I would think he's still a great recruiter. I mean, they had the number one recruiting class last year.
You could get another coach to recruit there.
You'd think. I feel like they're still scarred with the transition. I also feel like maybe they're it's sort of like if as long as they go la 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 la, nothing's happening.
Yeah.
Nothing will happen. And they think, like, as soon as we get rid of Sean Miller, we're admitting some kind of something wrong, okay. And then we're going to get hammered.
That at least makes more sense than no, we're digging our heels in. We love making the Elite Eight and going no further.
Elite Eight? My God, it's been years, years. They lose in the first round or don't make the tournament every year now.
That is true.
With superior talent.
That's the thing. If you can recruit that well, how can you not coach?
But, no, I don't. I mean, I'm so frustrated with Sean Miller, that fat, sweaty toad.
I'm just saying, if everything was fine, then yeah, he's recruiting really well, and you're always in the conversation.
I think they're thinking that if the sanctions did come down, if they actually have to acknowledge and accept the sanctions, it'll be harder to get a coach to come there that would then be worthy of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Staying in college basketball real quick, did you see, because Baylor was supposed to be the team that ASU played.
Yeah.
Did you see what they were doing?
I did not. Are they all having a party? I don't know.
No, they're just going to Las Vegas.
Just to hang out?
Yeah, hoping to play games. They said they're going to just show up in Las Vegas, and they're hoping that they'll get to play two games this weekend.
If teams
become available.
The way you described it, though, was like they were all going to stand on the strip dressed like Power Rangers and hope that like somebody would allow them
As Elmo.
Okay. Some of them as Elmo. Elmo and the Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
Does that strategy work? Hey, let's drive to Vegas and see if we can get a pickup game?
I don't know. The article said that they're hoping to play two games this weekend. They have no opponent scheduled for Saturday.
That's good.
That they're planning on potentially Washington for Sunday.
Whatever team goes and ends up like winning this season, I will give them a ton of credit for just the simple spontaneity of all of it. Like, how many games are you going to end up playing at the last second that you aren't able to prepare for? Or even the flip side, how many games are you preparing for and then you actually do get to play it, but the whole week you were kind of wondering and thinking you probably wouldn't get to play that team? You know what I mean? Everybody is so far out of their comfort zone that you can't, especially for a coach, you can't be like, oh, okay, we've got Memphis coming up on Thursday, let's prepare and prepare. And then on Wednesday night, you find out you're playing like Tulsa or something.
Right.
I mean, whoever survives this season and wins the whole thing.
I'm preparing for Baylor, and then you're playing Rhode Island,
yeah,
like with a day's notice.
And then Villanova. I knew you were going to potentially play Villanova, but still.
That was the point I pointed out earlier, that obviously, I guess it just doesn't take that much prep in college basketball compared to other sports.
Well, I guess.
Well, in baseball, do you remember in baseball? I mean, this is why like football is so full of themselves, because in baseball, when the outbreak happened with the Marlins and the Cardinals,
yeah,
they literally were like, okay, Orioles, you were going to play this team. Yankees, you were going to play this team. You can't play either. You're just going to play each other tomorrow instead.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay.
Yeah. Yep. It does take more prep, though, as far as game planning for football. But it shouldn't, and I've been saying this all season, and I'm glad that we're seeing teams adjust now. This whole thought of, well, if I can't have exactly a week to prepare for my opponent, we're just not going to play this week. Like, yeah, okay, well, then you're not ever going to play this season. All right, we come back. We'll get back into the NFL. The Cardinals matchup with the Patriots on Sunday is a big one. It's coming up. It's the Doug and Wolf Show, Luke Lipinski and Jarrett Carlin on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.